The Night Sky for September 2016. Well, the nights are drawing in now. We've got more time to observe the heavens, and we can still just about see all of the major planets as well as Neptune. So it's not a bad month. What about what we can see in the heavens first? Well, as dusk falls and it gets darker, you might spot Arcturus setting over on the western horizon. And of course, that lovely part of the sky, including the so-called summer triangle, which is made up of the three stars Altair in Aquila, Deneb in Cygnus, and Vega in Lyra. And these will be well high, slightly to the west of south. I do love that part of the sky. It's one of the most beautiful that we have. As one moves over towards the southern and slightly southeastern parts of the sky, we now begin to see the square of Pegasus. The top left-hand star, Alpheratz, is actually part of Andromeda, and that's the starting point for finding the Andromeda galaxy by what's called star hopping. You simply move up and to the left a bit, one star, and then a second star, then turn sharp right, one not quite so bright star, the same distance beyond, you should find the Andromeda galaxy. And the other way of finding it is to look up for Cassiopeia, which will be above it, towards the north, and the right hand, or the lower V-shape of the constellation stars will actually point down towards Andromeda. And on a dark, transparent night, you should be able to see it with your unaided eye, but with binoculars, you certainly will. But in fact, you're only really seeing the central part of the nucleus, which is much, much brighter than the outer parts, making it quite a hard thing to image. Many photographs actually burn out the central part, unless you're very careful. Well, above Deneb, moving to the north, we have the constellation of Cepheus. Not very bright. Its brightest star is Aldebaran. And hence, carrying on, you come across to Polaris, the pole star, close to the north celestial pole. Keeping going right down to the northern horizon, you'll find the two stars of first Dubhe and then Merak, the pointers that form part of the plough of Ursa Major. Well, what about the planets? We'll start the planets with Jupiter. Jupiter passes behind the Sun, and that's called Superior Conjunction, on the 26th of September, and so will only be seen low in the western sky after sunset for the first week or so of the month. It starts September shining at magnitude -1.7 and has an angular size of 31 arc seconds. Given a low horizon and clear skies, one may still be able to see the equatorial bands in the atmosphere and the four Galilean moons as they weave their way around it. We'll have to wait until mid-October for it to be seen again in the pre-dawn sky. Well, Saturn can also be seen after sunset low in the southwest. It lies in the southern part of Ophiuchus, moving slowly eastwards away from Antares in Scorpius, shining with a magnitude of +0.5. 1 hour after sunset, at the start of the month, it will only be about 10 degrees above the horizon, so the atmosphere will limit our view of its 16 arc-second disk. By month's end, it will only be a few degrees elevation at this time, so early this month is really our last chance to observe it until it passes behind the Sun and reappears in the pre-dawn sky. The ring system, which has now opened out to 26 degrees to the line of sight, almost its maximum, could still be seen along with Titan, its largest satellite. What about Mercury? Having dropped low into the dusk in the western sky in late August, it passes through Superior Conjunction on September the 12th. However, by the last week of the month, it will reappear into the pre-dawn sky, when it brightens by almost 3 magnitudes in just 9 days, from magnitude +2.5 on the 19th, and actually too faint to be seen, I think, up to -0.4 on the 28th, when it reaches greatest elongation, that's at 18 degrees west of the Sun, and then rises about 1.5 hours before sunrise. It'll then be best seen about 45 minutes before sunrise at an elevation of 9 degrees in the eastern sky, so you will need a good low eastern horizon. Mars. Well, Mars is moving eastwards across the heavens, away from Saturn and Antares, and can still be seen after nightfall, low in the south-southwest. It fades from magnitude minus 0.3 to plus 0.1 as September progresses, whilst its angular size drops from 10.5 to 8.8 arc seconds. On the 21st, Mars passes from Ophiuchus into Sagittarius. It will actually lie at a distance of one astronomical unit on the 19th, and given its low elevation and not particularly large disk, it's unlikely that any features could be discerned on its surface. Well, finally, Venus. Venus begins September just a few degrees above the western horizon and sets about one after the Sun. As the month progresses, this interval increases slightly to 1.25, whilst its brightness increases a fraction from minus 3.8 to minus 3.9 magnitudes. At the same time, its gibbous disk fattens from 11 to 12 arc seconds diameter. It's not really a very good month to observe it. Well, what highlights do we have in September? Actually, a good month to observe Neptune with a small telescope. Neptune, with its tiny angular diameter of 2.3 arc seconds, comes into opposition, when it's nearest the Earth pretty well, on the 2nd of September, so will be seen well this month. Its magnitude is plus 7.8, so it should be easily spotted with binoculars lying in the constellation Aquarius, as shown on the chart that I provide in the Night Sky page. Just search for Night Sky Jodrell Bank. It rises to an elevation of about 27 degrees when due south around midnight. Given a telescope of 8 inches or greater diameter and a dark, transparent night, it should even be possible to spot its moon, Titan. On September the 3rd, soon after sunset, you might be able to spot, low in the west-southwest, given clear skies and a very low horizon, the planets Jupiter, Venus, and a very thin crescent moon, Venus lying between the two. You might be able to spot the Earth shine on the unlit part of the crescent moon. That's light that illuminates it, reflected from clouds on the Earth. I suspect binoculars may well be needed, but please do not use them until after the sun has set. Around September the 5th to the 9th, after sunset, you can spot Saturn and Mars in the south-southwest. Looking after sunset in that direction, you should see Saturn, which will be above and to the right of Antares, that's in Scorpius, a red giant star, and Mars over to the left of Antares, whilst both are in the southern part of the constellation Ophiuchus. On September the 28th, after sunset, Mars lies just 1.5 degrees below the Lagoon Nebula M8 in Sagittarius. You'll need clear skies and a low horizon in the south-southwest, but that'd be a very nice thing to either observe or even image. On September the 29th, before dawn, you might be able to spot Mercury and a very thin crescent moon. So looking east before dawn, given, again, a low horizon, if clear, it should be possible to spot Mercury just to the lower right of a very thin crescent moon. That will be quite an observing challenge, I suspect. So although we can see all the planets this month, none of them are particularly well placed. And finally, I often suggest something to look at on the moon's surface. And this month, on the nights of the 9th and 22nd of September, would be a good time to observe the Alpine Valley. It's a very interesting feature on the moon. Obviously, you'll need a small telescope. Close to the terminator, on those two nights, is the Apennine mountain chain that marks the edge of Mare Imbrium. Towards the upper end, you should see a cleft across them, which is called the Alpine Valley. It's about 7 miles wide and 79 miles long. A couple of nights later, you should also see, as the moon moves towards full, the rather lovely crater Plato. It's very dark, and there's also the young crater Copernicus, at the end of the Apennine mountain chain. It's a very interesting region of the moon. A very good program to help you with your lunar observing is called the Virtual Moon Atlas. You can download it for free. And this is where I look at the terminator on the moon and find out when it's close to the objects I suggest you might observe. So have a go at that. It's a very useful program. Well, best of luck. Quite a bit to see, and of course, a bit more time to do it in.
Thanks for that, Ian. And now we're going to move on to the Southern Hemisphere night sky, and we're going to welcome back a voice which has been missed very much by lots of people. It's Claire Breverton's back from maternity leave. She was last on the 2015 August episode of the Jogcast, and during the interim period, Haritina's done an excellent job doing the night sky south. But don't worry, you're not going to miss her, because we're already planning on working out ways that she can stay in the Jogcast episodes, so you'll hear more from Haritina very soon. But for now, it's very nice for our Antipodean listeners to have back the voice of Claire Breverton with the night sky where you are.
Kia ora, and welcome to the September Jodcast from Space Place at Carter Observatory here in Wellington, New Zealand. It's hard to believe that it's now a year since the birth of my daughter Seren, whose name means star in Welsh, by the way. So after taking some time out to spend with her, I'm back to pick up the reins of the Southern Night Sky Jodcast. Huge thanks to Haritina for doing such an amazing job in my absence. September marks the start of the spring here in the Southern Hemisphere, and as we head towards the equinox on the 23rd, our days begin to lengthen. Sunset and sunrise times change rapidly at this time of the year, with the sun dipping below the horizon an hour and a half later at the end of the month than at the beginning. By the end of September, the sun won't be setting until nearly 7:30. Whilst we're looking forward to some better weather, this also means fewer hours of darkness to get out and observe our southern skies. All five naked-eye planets continue their planetary dance this month. Jupiter, Mercury, and Venus begin the month close together above the western horizon after dark. Venus is the brightest and the highest of the three, easy to spot even in the twilight sky. Jupiter, with its golden glow, is below, with fainter Mercury to the left. Mercury slips quickly into the twilight sky, with Jupiter following by mid-month. After passing between us and the sun, Mercury will make a morning appearance during late September, but it won't be rising until twilight is well underway, making it very difficult to spot. Venus moves quickly up away from the other two, passing up to the right of the 0.9 magnitude spiker around the 19th of the month, and by the end of the month it will be setting over 2.5 hours after the sun. Mars and Saturn continue to form a triangle with Antares, high in the northern sky after dark. Saturn is almost directly below Antares, and the two remain close together throughout the month, gradually dropping lower in our evening skies, and setting by around midnight at the end of September. Mars, the brightest of the three, begins the month just to the right of Saturn Antares, but holds its position in the sky as it moves eastwards against the background stars, drifting up and to the right away from Saturn as the month wears on. The bright stars Canopus and Vega mark north-south after dark this month. Canopus is the second brightest star in the nighttime sky, and the brightest in the southern constellation of Carina, the Keel. Carina was once part of the great ship Argo Navis, which sails across the southern skies. In 1752, the French astronomer Nicolas Louis de Lassay split Argo Navis into three smaller constellations of more manageable size: Carina, the Keel; Puppis, the poop deck or stern; and Vela, the sails. To Maori, Canopus is known as Atutahi or Autahi, meaning stand-alone, because of its isolated position outside the band of the Milky Way. Canopus represents the Ariki or High Chief of the Heavens, and is circumpolar here in New Zealand, always visible in our nighttime skies. Vega, in the constellation of Lyra, is the fifth brightest star in the sky, and at just 25 light-years away, one of the brightest in our local neighbourhood. It is also one of the best studied, and was the first star outside our sun to be photographed in 1850. Vega is also extensively used by astronomers for photometric calibration. It is used as a zero point to define the UBVRI photometric system, first introduced in the 1950s and extended in the 1970s, to classify stars according to their colours. Along with the nearby bright stars of Deneb in Cygnus the Swan and Altair in Aquila the Eagle, Vega forms part of the Winter Triangle, as seen here in the Southern Hemisphere. Altair is easy to spot, lying along the band of the Milky Way, midway up the northern sky after dark. Deneb is harder to see, just skirting along the horizon from northern parts of the country. Between Vega and Alta is Albireo, or Beta Cygni, the beak star, marking the head of the swan. Although it appears as a single star to the naked eye, Albireo is in fact a double star and a lovely sight in a small telescope because of the easily seen contrast in colour between the blue and gold components. The two stars are 35 arc seconds apart, meaning they are separated by 60 times the diameter of our solar system and may take 100,000 years to orbit each other. The brighter magnitude 3 yellow star has also been found to be a binary star in its own right, but a much larger telescope and excellent observing conditions or complicated image processing would be needed to resolve it. Albireo is best viewed using low magnification, as the colours stand out more clearly when the stars appear close together. You might also try defocusing your telescope a little to spread out the star's light, making the colours easier to see. A similar distance to the other side of Alta is Alpha Capricorni. Whilst it has the Alpha designation, it is actually the third brightest star in the zodiac constellation of Capricorn, the goat, and is commonly known as Algedi, meaning the kid. Alpha Cap is another double star, but this time the effect is purely coincidence. Although these stars appear close together, their proximity is just a line-of-sight effect, with the two components positioned at 109 and 690 light-years away. Alpha 2, or Secunda Geidi, is the closer and brighter of the two, a giant star with a luminosity around 40 times that of the Sun and an apparent magnitude of 3.58. Alpha 1, or Prima Geidi, is a supergiant over 5 times more distant, but at 5 times the mass and over 1,000 times the luminosity of the Sun, it is only slightly fainter in our skies, at magnitude 4.3. Both are evolved G-class yellow stars at a similar temperature to the Sun, and Alpha Geidi is a multiple star in its own right, with at least 3 faint companions nearby. Prima and Secunda are located 6.6 arc minutes apart, around one-fifth the diameter of the full moon, and can be separated fairly easily even with the naked eye. As Haritina mentioned last month, the Milky Way is spectacular in our evening skies at this time of year, passing from Vega and Alta towards the north, through Sagittarius and Scorpius overhead, and down to the southern horizon, just to the west of Canopus. Midway up the southern sky, you'll find Crux, the Southern Cross, with the pointers Alpha and Beta Centauri above. Alpha Centauri is another multiple star system, and at a distance of 4.37 light-years is the closest star system to our Sun. The two main components, Alpha Cent A and B, are both similar in mass and luminosity to the Sun, and are close enough that they would fit within the orbit of Pluto. They are too close together to be resolved with the naked eye, but a pair of binoculars or small telescope will easily separate them. The third component, Alpha Centauri C, is a small, faint red dwarf star, also known as Proxima Centauri, which can be glimpsed even in a small telescope. Lying 0.2 parsecs, or 15,000 AU from the AB pair, that's around 500 times the orbit of Neptune, Proxima Centauri's current distance of around 4.25 light-years makes it the closest star to our Sun. On the 24th of August, a team of astronomers led by Guillem Anglada Escudé announced that they have discovered a potentially Earth-like planet orbiting around Proxima Centauri. The planet was identified using radial velocity measurements of its parent star. As the planet orbits, it causes the star to wobble, and this wobble can be detected by measuring the Doppler shift in the star's spectrum. Named Proxima b, the newly discovered planet takes just 11.2 days to orbit its star, putting it at 1/20th of the distance from the Earth to the Sun. But, because Proxima Centauri is a much smaller, fainter star, the energy the planet receives is around 2/3 the energy that reaches Earth. So Proxima b lies firmly in the habitable zone, the region of space where any water on the planet could be liquid. With a minimum mass of 1.3 times the Earth, this opens up an exciting possibility that not only have we found a planet around our nearest star, but that this planet may be Earth-like and potentially able to support life. Wishing you clear skies from the team here at Space Place at Carter Observatory.